Welcome to Commons Conversations, a series of interviews with campaigners sharing their experiences and insights into activism, learning in movements, radical history, and more. This episode is from our second series and was originally broadcast on Community Radio 3CR. In it, Aoife Carley-Hannan, Engagement Officer with the Commons Library, chats with Hannah O'Rourke, co-founder of the UK-based Campaign Lab and a trainer with Social Movement Technologies. They discuss the role AI technologies can play in supporting campaigners with messaging, outreach, and other opportunities. They also canvass issues in regards to ethics and regulation, and ways in which activists can shape the use of technology as well as overcome its barriers and limitations. The podcast is produced by the Commons Social Change Library, a website containing over 1,000 resources for campaigners, which can be accessed for free at commonslibrary.org. The library contains many other podcasts, including other episodes in our Commons Conversation series.
Before we begin the interview, I'd just like to acknowledge that I'm personally tuning in from the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation in Naam, which is also known as Melbourne, and just pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. So we have Hannah here today from the UK. I'd just firstly like to know a little bit about you, Hannah, and a little bit about social movement technologies.
Sure. So Social Movement Technologies is an organization, it's an NGO that provides kind of training, advice, strategy for people who are kind of building movements and trying to build power, particularly on how they can use technology in a way that is kind of helping them achieve their campaign objectives. So they have lots of different trainings for people all over the world and groups all over the world, both big and small, on things like how you organize decentrally, how you kind of respond to cybersecurity. They have a strand looking at how you can use AI tools in campaigning. So I'm a trainer with them. So I help train in AI and campaigning. Mm-hmm. And then in the UK, which is where I'm based, I run an organization called Campaign Lab, which looks at campaign innovation and how people are kind of like innovating in terms of campaigns and responding to new technology.
Awesome. And so in terms of new AI technologies such as ChatGPT, mm-hmm. how would you say that they can help us in crafting effective campaign messaging?
So this is a really interesting one. But the biggest thing that things like ChatGPT do is they're incredibly good at language because they're large language models. So they've taken in like millions of data points and lots of text from all over the internet. And then what they're doing is often they're sort of predicting the next word. So people sometimes think, oh, this technology is thinking. It's not usually thinking. It's just predicting the next most likely word. Mm-hmm. This is incredibly helpful when you're trying to like come up with messaging or think about how to construct sentences. So I think the most useful thing that kind of things like ChatGPT can do for us is they can help us avoid that sort of like blank page when you're just starting with something. They're very good at giving you a starting point. I definitely would always suggest that people don't just like run with the first like thing that comes out of these models. A lot of the kind of art is in kind of successively prompting them and being like, oh, could you make that a little bit shorter? Or, oh, I'd like the tone to be a bit more informal. Or can you make this sound like this person? And those can be really useful like prompts in terms of getting more interesting things out of the model. But yeah, I certainly would advise sort of using it very much in partnership with like human creativity, because that's still a really important part of what we do.
Yeah, awesome. So it's kind of more like a dialogue with ChatGPT as you're kind of creating. Yes,
definitely.
And so how can AI play an effective role in reaching specific audience groups during campaigns?
So one thing that I found it can be quite useful for doing is if you're trying to reach, say, a group that are quite different to you, or you're trying to, I guess, bridge build between two very different groups and you're part of one group. One thing that can be quite helpful is you can sometimes ask ChatGPT to take on a persona and you can have kind of a discussion with that persona. And obviously, in some ways, this is quite shallow, but it's also very useful if you're kind of a very small campaign group and say you can't afford to pay for polling or focus groups. This is kind of another way to explore that or think about that. And again, it's kind of just manufacturing a persona. There's been some really interesting research. There's a good Medium article about it where they sort of simulated some focus groups around the junior doctor strikes. So a data scientist, I think, basically created various personas based on like British public and then got them into a kind of focus group and ask ChatGPT to take on these personas and then discuss like political attitudes to the junior doctor strike, and then saw whether that correlated with things like polling or focus groups that had been run officially. And I think you found quite a lot of crossover. So that kind of thing can be quite useful. I would say there's always limits to that, in the sense that it's no substitute to actually talking to real people about how they think and feel. I think also, you know, you have to be wary of, like, ChatGPT is obviously trained on data, which is from our society. Our society contains all sorts of biases, inherent, like, systemic biases that are there. So anything that you're interacting with in the model will have those baked in. So you've always got to be quite, like, kind of, I guess, aware of that. In the sort of training we run, I always like go to say the image generation software, and I say, type in a picture of an Irish person, and I often get like a very someone all dressed in green, you know, and I'm Irish myself, and I'm like, well, that's not necessarily an Irish person, that's a very stereotypical Irish person. So you will kind of get stereotypes and things too. So I think particularly if you're trying to do work that overcomes that, you just need to be really mindful of that when you're engaging with the models. Not to say that you can't overcome it in some way, but just be aware that there are kind of limitations.
Yeah, awesome. And what would you say some of the other limitations of ChatGPT and other such technologies are?
I guess the biggest thing is that it's not always correct and it does get things wrong. So you can't completely like trust all the information that's coming out of it, and you never should. We always talk about this idea of keeping a human in the loop. You shouldn't really be like issuing content that is wholly generated by ChatGPT. It should always be like part of a broader like workflow in which a human is involved in checking it. So I would always caution against just kind of taking the first thing and not checking it, because it can get things wrong. It's very limited by its kind of training data. Obviously, you've got some versions of it that can browse the web, which means it can be more up to date. But the basic version of ChatGPT is limited up to a certain point in time. Therefore, if you're relying on it for like current events, that's not super reliable if you're not using the version that has web browsing enabled. And I think also like there are obviously some kind of ethical questions much more deeper about, you know, whether we should be using these tools, the kind of deeper impacts around kind of copyright and like things like that. There's a really interesting example where lots of artists who are really upset with the kind of image generation models have started organizing in a really interesting way, where they've, in their artwork, when it's online, they've kind of created a digital poison, which means that if it's sucked up by a model, the model doesn't read the art correctly, and then that then poisons the training data set. Yeah, it's a very interesting way of like fighting back. So there are a lot of kind of deeper ethical questions about, you know, jobs, copyright, AI safety is another big one. So I think like those are some other kind of deeper, I guess, ethical limitations. I mean, from my point of view, where I've got to on that is, number one, I'm very aware that like the government needs to take some kind of precaution in trying to legislate around safety, particularly with these models. And obviously we need to have a really robust response in terms of like unions and job security and things like that. But I also do believe that people, particularly campaigners who might be struggling with very small resources and small teams, should not let this opportunity to do more using this technology pass us by. I also very much believe that when a new technology kind of enters the world, people who are trying to do good in the world have a duty to use that and shape how it's being used. So if we don't sort of engage with it, we're just kind of surrendering that whole territory to like people who might use it for much worse reasons. I very much believe that with technology, it's important for people with kind of like missions or who want to do good to kind of shape how it's used. And that's happened like throughout our kind of history. I think often, particularly with like newer phases of technology, we have been quite slow to build things and to make things and to, you know, use new technology to make the kind of world we want to see. And I think that's a really important thing to do. So that's kind of where I rest on that, and that's how I square that circle. But that's not to say there aren't like significant ethical questions which people really need to be working on and thinking about. And I do know a lot of campaigns and communities organizing around those questions, which I'm very glad they exist.
Yeah, absolutely. I had another interview with someone called Ned Howie from Tectonica, and we had a similar kind of conversation around those particular ethical challenges. But one of the things that he talked about a lot that I've also kind of noticed is, you know, there's a little bit of a hesitancy, I think, in a lot of people working in campaigns and stuff, because we know there's ethical challenges. So it's, not sure about using AI, but in doing so, we're leaving it up to, our opponents, so to speak, to use AI in ways that are not so constructive, and how important that is for kind of us to be taking those on constructively. Yeah, so I guess in that as well, do you have some examples of how AI has been used successfully to improve, say, messaging in electoral campaigns or other types of campaigns?
So we're still quite early on, in the sense that I think people are still kind of finding their feet in how to use this well. It's definitely been used in different electoral campaigns over the world to varying degrees of success. I think in one country, they used it very much to kind of create lots of funny memes of like their opponent, and that was quite interesting. So it's very obviously like fake generated content, but it was funny. In the UK, we've had some AI deep fakes have been used so far, and they've been kind of released on Twitter, which have been obviously quite concerning and a bit of a problem. And then it was very interesting in the States, I think Ron DeSantis started using ChatGPT hooked up to WhatsApp. So he would sort of, his campaign would WhatsApp people, and then they'd be having a back and forth. And then I think one activist noticed that the kind of responses were quite stock. And then they said, are you an AI? Asked for a maths question first. They were like, can you tell me what 2 + 2 is? And then dutifully, the model goes, 2 + 2 is 4. And then the next question was like, are you an AI? And it was like, yes, I was built by OpenAI. And obviously that's really wrong, because at no point was anybody informed that they were talking to an AI. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of problematic. You've also seen, like, in the States, various political adverts being made by AI. And I think you're starting to get kind of more models trained on, say, bespoke political data, which then will message craft or political campaigns a bit better. So you're sort of seeing the beginnings of it, but I've not seen any like being used like massively yet, but you're seeing the beginnings of people experimenting and trying to use this kind of technology, both for good and for ill. And I think there are quite a lot of opportunities, but again, like, there was an interesting study done, I think by Oxford University, where they tested AI generated messaging versus targeted messaging that was generated by AI. And they found that the AI messaging generated by AI that was just general messaging was effective. The targeting one wasn't more effective than the other one. So I think there's still mixed success in terms of how people are using it to target. I mean, the one success that I found when I've been like, messing about with it, has been like, if you ask it to take on a tone of voice of a person, it's quite good at then coming up with really interesting things that you might not have thought of before. So, I asked it to do kind of a defense of, in the UK, we have like low traffic neighborhoods that become like a very contentious issue in places like London. And I said, can you write a defense of low traffic neighborhoods, which obviously mean less traffic for the environment, in the style of Donald Trump? And actually, what it came out with was really, really interesting. And I was like, oh, I hadn't thought about this issue in that way. Like, it was very much emphasizing more community and keeping communities safe and that kind of thing. Whereas, normally our instincts would be to go towards like the kind of environmental concern or the orientation in a very different way to how I would have thought about it. So I think, yeah, it can be very useful for that, but yet to see like it being used on a kind of huge systemic level.
And touching on the limitations again, obviously some of those are sort of beyond campaigners themselves, as we're using AI and will require their own campaigns in order to regulate and all that kind of stuff. But I guess for just campaigners in general using these sort of new AI technologies, how would you suggest they'd overcome some of the limitations or barriers that you've talked about?
So I think those limitations, the biggest way to overcome them is just to check content that's coming out of them. And again, that second kind of rule about human in the loop being really, really important. One of the big problems as well with it, and I guess this is a more general problem, is that we actually don't know how to necessarily limit these models. Like, there are certain ways that you can kind of create limits in terms of what kind of thing it would talk about. So if you're kind of, say, building a chatbot to talk about, say, your campaign issues, you can kind of limit it a bit, but then there will always be ways for people to kind of talk about something else, and you can't necessarily restrict it in the same way, because we have no sense of how, we kind of know at the top level that it's predicting the next word, but it's not like we can understand those individual predictions. Like, we're way beyond being able to understand that. So I would say like it's quite hard to limit what it focuses on. So I would definitely be like aware of that if I was building things on top of it. I think also fundamentally the technology is still quite unstable. So I'd be wary of making like huge stuff that depends on it on top of it and making it kind of part of a like much more bigger automated process. I don't think we're quite there yet. We might be in 6 months, but currently I'd still caution against that. I think the biggest way that campaigners can use it and again use it productively is as the sort of thing that they are in dialogue with, and see it as kind of a tool that you use in your sort of suite of different tools when you're like creating something in your job. So I would say that's the main way to kind of overcome limits with this technology, is kind of treating it like a tool that you use and very much being in dialogue with it and not letting anything out that hasn't been checked by you. I think also there are kind of like deeper sort of ethical questions for campaigners. Again, there's a sort of like particular on things like AI generated images. So again, you had recently, I think Amnesty came under fire because they used an AI-generated image to publicize a kind of fundraiser for people who've been victims of like the police when they attended a protest. And they basically used AI-generated images of the protests. And what was really interesting about that was they were really transparent about the fact that they were using AI. And they said the reason they were using it was because they wanted to protect the identity of the protesters. They wanted to kind of still convey the image of the protest, but protect the identities, which I personally thought was actually a fair ethical line to draw. But lots of other people were like, no, you're muddying the waters, or, you know, you shouldn't be using AI images, or what about like photographers who might be taking pictures of the protests? So, no, would you not use one of their photos? So it sparked off quite a big debate. So I think like things with images, you've got to be kind of, you've got to really think about why you're using the image. And then like, there will be organizations that will kind of have to have these kind of deep ethical debates within them and think about, okay, when do we use an image? I mean, one of the ways that like, I think the images can be really useful is where you're trying to illustrate something conceptually, which you might not have like been able to show before. So for example, a campaign around transparency in Parliament, it was really cool to be able to make an image of like Parliament in a glass box. And like, that's conceptually quite an interesting thing to convey. So I think it can actually increase the sophistication of the kind of images we use in campaigning, but you wouldn't want it to like, you know, you wouldn't want to constantly be like creating too many people, or, you know, that feels like on the edge of something that might be wrong. I mean, one example where it might be right is if you're particularly working with like vulnerable groups who don't necessarily want to be photographed, but they still want their stories to be told. So it's, you know, there are pros and cons, and you have to kind of weigh it up and understand, okay, why am I doing this? And go back to like, is what I'm doing ethically helping my cause? Is it harming anybody? Is it, you know, actually helping people to tell their stories? Is it not helping? And that's there are the kind of fuzzy lines, which I think every organization has to kind of work out for themselves.
Absolutely. And like you're saying with Amnesty, I mean, because it's all new as well, there's going to be a lot of kind of back and forth and figuring out, you know, amongst sort of the broader community as well as within the organization, which things sit well and which things don't sit well. I was just remembering that I saw recently that I think it was South Korea, the president had created like an AI avatar to appeal to young people, and it was quite successful. And I thought that was just interesting in terms of that like kind of targeting, and especially I think it was around the language they were able to use with the avatar, that it was very like his way of speaking was usually kind of, I guess, appealed to an older demographic was kind of like traditional, like, so to speak, politician speak, as opposed to, say, the way, you know, younger people might talk amongst themselves. I don't know. Do you have any?
That is fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting. I was going to say, like, do you have any thoughts in terms of like, I guess particularly applies to electoral campaigns where you're kind of looking at leaders that are trying to appeal to so many different demographics, but potentially wouldn't in their style, if that's.
Yeah, I think I, you know, my background is in sort of electoral political campaigning. And yeah, I think there is, things are about to get weird. So I think, yeah, we're going to see more stuff like people doing experiments and things like that. I do think though, like deeper down, as we get into this sort of idea of AI avatars or like, you know, deep fakes or fake content that's generated, increasingly people are going to really struggle to trust what they see online. They already struggle to trust what they see online, and you know, this is where you've got the growth of things like fake news and things like that. But I think fundamentally what will become more important for politicians is like building trust with people. And already, like, most people don't trust political systems. And I think it's very important that, like, anybody working in politics is thinking about that core problem of trust, because actually, like, that's going to become harder and harder to build. And actually, the way that you build trust in political campaigning isn't just by having one big showy thing. It's like 1,000 acts build trust, not one big act. So actually, it's about relationships. It's about relational campaigning. It's about knocking on people's doors and talking to them about the party, what the party will do for them. It's about being true to your word. You say as a local politician that you're going to like clean up that park, and you go and you do it, and then you demonstrate that, and then you build trust. And like, I think in some ways AI is very exciting and great, and there's loads of cool things that can be done. But too often people are looking for a shortcut to building that trust. And actually building that trust is hard work. Being a good representative, it's being accountable, it's, you know, transparent about what you're going to do and then doing it. And I think too often our politicians don't do those things. And I hope that this will be a useful reset in terms of like how they see their role in the political system, and how they sort of see what they should be doing for people and how they should be accountable to people. So I think on the one hand, AI is very exciting and can do cool things. On the other hand, back to basics, relationships, building trust. I hope it will mean that we demand more of our representatives as well.
Would you say that in terms of building trust and accountability, that transparency in the use of AI will be something that is really important in terms of using AI in campaigns in general?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to see most campaigns coming out with like clear policies about how they're using AI and when. And I think that transparency piece is quite important. But again, I think we come back to like this idea of trust and messengers. So like, we have fake news now. People make things up. People Photoshop things. You already have that problem. And the problem again goes back to trust. So part of building that trust might be about being more transparent about your use of AI and when you use it and how. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. But I also hope that because you kind of save some time when you're campaigning, if you're using AI, because, you know, it gives you a good first draft, or it does that boring work email that you needed to write. And actually it was easy for the AI to do it. So you got the AI to do it. That frees up more of our time as campaigners. And the question is like, how do we use that time? And actually, if we use that time for like building relationships, building coalitions, doing the tricky stuff that maybe it's harder for AI to do, I think that will be a really good outcome for us. So yeah, thinking about time saved and then how we spend that time feels like an important question too.
So how would you say you'd envision AI being used into the future? Maybe a utopian or dystopian way, whichever you prefer.
So I think I would hope that we end up in a situation where AI is used in partnership with humans, very much like this, what we do now, the idea of successive prompting and, you know, working on things. I think we're increasingly going to see like levels of automation, which mean that the human is less involved. And I think the question is like, what are the limits of that? And how do you do that in a way that is fair? I think there are real problems with like, you know, algorithmic biases and things like that. So I think questions about how that might change the nature of work and what we are then subject to. I think it's very important to have, for example, like where you're working under an algorithm. So for example, platform workers, where an algorithm is deciding how their shifts might be allocated. It's very important to have algorithmic accountability and transparency. So I strongly believe things like unions should have a right to see algorithms and see like the kind of algorithms that are setting work for people. And that's going to be an increasingly important question. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know what the future is going to look like. I mean, one of the things that like I'm very involved in the UK is something called the UK Civic AI Observatory, which was set up by the London College of Political Technology over here. And that is basically an attempt to try and be an observatory, see what's coming, see how things are changing, because ultimately things are changing very quickly. And we have no idea of like how this will play out, I guess, or what we'll end up with, because it's really hard to understand that. So it's quite hard to predict too far into the future. I do also think we have to be quite serious about the safety concerns. And again, people far cleverer than I have written extensively about this, but I think paying heed to sort of not just the safety in terms of robots are going to take over the world and kill us all, but also safety in terms of like how much are we sort of like aware of how these things operate before we have these things kind of running key functions is a good question. And then also I think there's kind of another question, which is like the economic transition that might happen due to AI technology and how that will affect jobs and economies, and kind of making sure that people are equipped to deal with that and our societies are equipped to deal with that. And then there's kind of this third bucket, which is like how people socially start engaging with AIs. Like, how does it change how we relate to AIs? Do people become addicted to this technology? There's a whole load of like social effects that are possibly quite chaotic as a result of this. And actually, like, we have to kind of have a sense of like how we're going to manage that as a society. So those are the main thoughts I have. I guess I don't have a sense of how we'll work with AIs. I would hope in partnership, in the kind of way that we've been doing thus far, and that we kind of have that accountability and we have these like deeper questions about what kind of stuff is coming out of the AI, and that we're able to do that in a way that's like transparent and clear and like understandable and interpretable. But yeah, these are quite big questions, and I think it's also okay not to know the answer right now either.
Absolutely.
And important that we're honest about not knowing the answer.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think the other thing as well, I mean, it's awesome to be having people talking about the policies and frameworks now as well, because the reality is like we're really catching up still with a lot of the technologies that we already have, such as social media, that have been not regulated well for so long, that now we've got a whole new world introduced to us in these new AI technologies that we're kind of playing catch-ups. And so we're trying to kind of get ahead and be prepared for what's going to come, but it's so sort of unclear and there's so many potential directions as well.
Yeah, I think definitely our leaders and our political systems have failed us quite a lot in terms of technology. You think about, as you say, social media, and like we're only just catching up to like broader effects of that. Again, I think a lot of this comes down to the sort of people that are in politics and like whether they like have the skills or knowledge to do this, or they're not being prepared. I also think like the moment you have like tech companies that are able to pay for like huge lobbying abilities, whereas like anybody else who's got kind of different, more nuanced views aren't maybe as like well equipped to reach politicians. So I think there's a real problem with that. And yeah, as we go forward, we're going to have to develop better systems of governance to be able to deal with these kind of things, because we are, I think, in for quite a changing century. And things are going to keep changing. So actually we need to be prepared to deal with change, and we need people to feel secure in dealing with change. And that involves like investing in public services, investing in education, making people feel confident about changes to like their lives and their jobs, because they have security of knowing that we've got good public services that like are there for them when they need them. And like those kind of things really are important. Investing in social infrastructure, like making sure people aren't lonely, people don't get addicted to technology, because actually there's like a rich community life, you know, all these things need to be built, because we're about providing security and resilience in an age of what will be quite a lot of change. And again, I'm not sure we're really thinking about that, or we're really prepared for that, which, you know, is in the box of other things to consider / worry about.
The ever-growing box.
You've been listening to Commons Conversations, produced by the Commons Social Change Library, a website containing over 1,000 resources for campaigners, all of which can be accessed for free at commonslibrary.org.